So let's say one thing I've heard about Jesus is that it's beneficial for a person's sexual life because he has to refrain from engaging in sex, and a person who's always indulging in it is going to have the sexual act is going to not be as pleasurable, it's going to be too much indulgence. So would you say that's correct?
You're a mayor of it.
Okay, so
that's the purpose of Nida, is that every time she goes to the mikvah, it's like a nuchasna. Because otherwise, the couples become bored with each other.
So, so why would you? Okay, so let's say you would say a person who puts himself in a painful position only so he could gain more pleasure afterwards, you would say that's unintelligent, like a person who starves himself so he could enjoy food better later, or he does something painful to himself just to be relieved. Like, so why is it intelligent in the case of sex, but in all these other cases we would say it's foolish to do it?
Case of marriage. So over there, Mayer is saying that the person always has an interest in the marriage, whereas otherwise the marriage becomes boring and the person really loses interest and it's not exciting anymore. So so there's a loss in terms of the relationship. And this is something which goes on all most of their lives. So certainly it is beneficial. You see the benefit there. It's not just the benefit in terms of the sexual pleasure, but it's the benefit in terms of the relationship as well. So that's an important part of the relationship. So really, it's it is a far better way of life. A far better way of life. So your question is simply, why don't you always just give yourself pain in order to get better?
Why is that case different than any other kind of physical pleasure?
Well, I think that most of the philosophers agree that overindulgence in pleasure, that the Rambam says that pleasure comes about for one of two reasons: either because you have a desire, or else because it's a new thing. When you have neither of those properties, so there's no pleasure. So it is true that probably a person who eats less and eats when he's hungry has much more pleasure than a person who is constantly eating. So it would seem that that does make sense to do that.
So
in all the types, it makes sense. Because the reduction of the taiva really helps you to enjoy the taiva, and then the enjoyment of the taiva gives you certain satisfaction. Otherwise, you're in a state of limbo.
Where does Rambam say that?
Rambam says in the Mara.
So, where would the line be, let's say, because a person who starves himself for like 2 days just so he could have a good meal, it seems like you would say that's going too far. That's already putting yourself in a very painful situation just so, to have magnified pleasure later on. So is it just a question of limiting it as opposed to totally depriving yourself? Or is it something else?
What are the parameters
there? Yeah, kind of like you spoke about, like, the itching pattern, like a guy who would put itching pattern on himself, so Is that
that makes sense.
Yeah. So is that similar to what we're talking about here?
Good question. See, another question too, but what's that person that starves himself just to enjoy the food, so he's really indulging in talk and taiva. So why isn't that really bad? You know what I mean? Because then he's taking himself into the world of taiva, away from the world of thought.
And that's the central focus.
That's right, that's the central focus.
And you see the Torah didn't only limit food, it offers certain food.
That's not the limit. Well, the Ramban says that comes as a kedushin to you. That the person should be moderate. Good question. I would say like this, that see, with pleasure, the quantity is important. Like if the person indulges in intense pleasure, so then that takes them away from the world of ideas. On the other hand, the person needs pleasure. And without pleasure, it becomes despondent. So he must have pleasure. So therefore, you need a certain moderation. Certain moderation where you have the pleasure, and yet it's not it's not something that's overpowering. So that's why, for instance, that's why the Torah said having prostitutes. So his wife is something wrong with it. His wife is enough to give him satisfaction. But if he'd go into prostitution, so then he'd be going into a draw where the pleasure would be excessive and would draw all his energies. So you don't want to draw all the energies of the person. But on the other hand, you don't want to have the person be in an unhappy state. So therefore you need pleasure, but in moderation. So the lack of pleasure is not good either, because then the person is frustrated. So too much pleasure is not good either, because it draws the person into the world of pleasure. But a modicum of pleasure is necessary in order for the person to have a good life and be in a good frame of mind, so that he could learn and he could continue with the important things in life. So that's why nida is very good, because nida is something which keeps the enjoyment going throughout the cup of life, and at the same time, it's not something which is, since it's the same wife, it's not something which is completely overpowering, where you're going to overindulge. Even though Chazal were careful about that too, because they say you could overindulge with your wife as well. So they recommended against that. But nevertheless, to have a situation where there is no pleasure or very little pleasure, that's not a healthy situation either. I think Socrates says the mind works best when it's neither in pain nor in pleasure. When it's moderate. So if you don't have any pleasure, you're in a state of frustration. So that's not a good state. If you have too much pleasure, then you're drawing all the energy away from the mind. If you have too little, you're also drawing it all away, because you're drawing it away into pain. So the Torah aims at a level where there's moderation. Not overindulgence.
You kind of have to be satisfied.
What?
You just have to be satisfied.
That's right, satisfied. But not a life like that. I remember there was a fellow next door. I wasn't religious. And he told me, he said that after he got married, he said after like about 6 months, he lost interest in his wife. So I explained to him, I said, that's because you don't have neither. You know, I said, I like that idea. But he couldn't impose himself. But he said, the whole thing came out, and he said. So that's not good, because for several reasons. First of all, the person starts looking around elsewhere, where he harms the family, himself and his wife, his relationship. And secondly, he's in a state of frustration. And then he has to indulge in a state of high pleasure, which is not good either. So the Torah worked it out. That's what Mary says, the Torah worked it out perfectly, so that the person is satisfied, he has enjoyments, and he's satisfied, and yet he's not overindulgent.
And does that work, like Jonah said, in all the other areas of pleasure?
Yeah, it works in all the other areas. So the Torah aims for a certain moderation. Like it says, Tisava nashcha lechol basar. You shouldn't just eat basar anytime. You should wait until you have the taiva. And when the Torah there are cherets, because you'll enjoy it if you wait, and you won't be, first of all, you'll retain your enjoyment, and secondly, you won't be a glutton.
That was Gemara?
What?
That's Gemara?
Yeah. It's Gemara, yeah. A person should only eat meat when he has a desire for it. Should wait for the desire. So then he'll have greater enjoyment, and he won't be overindulgent.
So you're saying even in the sexual, it would be harmful to totally refrain, and also, what Nita is protecting against to indulge in, and the same thing with other types of physical pleasures, that people have that balance?
That's correct. So what's not good, the person eats the steak every day, he gets frustrated too, because he's used to it, doesn't have the enjoyment, and he tries more and more to gain more from the eating. Then he becomes a glutton. Then he goes into gluttony. In order to increase the pleasure, he goes into gluttony. But that's the general attitude. That's why it says there's a minig that's brought down in the the Bala Tesis on the Chumash. On the side of Chumash there's the Bala Tesis.
Okay.
So by the Parsha of Shri Yayin, take a look at it. So it says over there that the minig is that the person that's making Bichas Mazon says stuff read, and everybody answers, everybody responds when he says stuff read. They say, they answer back that it should be l'chaim. Why l'chaim? Because the wine is good in a little bit in moderation, and too much is no good. So this is the funny thing, it's the Bala Tesis, it's really Ashkenazim. But the Sfaradim took it up. How did you do that, right?
I'm not
sorry.
Yeah.
Rabbi Osai, and then everybody said L'chaim.
Yeah.
That's the Tosos.
It's an idea of moderation, you're saying.
Idea of moderation. That it's good, wine is good, but in moderation.
Oh, why? Because you're saying, like, L'chaim meaning it's only a means for true.
L'chaim means it should be a means for a good life.
Right.
Not a destructive person.
Because
the person is a drunkard, that's a destructive force. The person has a little wine once in a while, that's it's a good thing. You see, on Yom Tov, there's a chiyuv to have like this again every day.
So the thing is, by this overindulgence wouldn't necessarily apply to intellectual endeavors, right? Or would it?
Right, no, because over there in the intellectual, the person is really interested, doesn't really put them in pain, puts them in pleasure. That's the one thing the person can always enjoy.
Right.
that's a good thing. It doesn't work that way in the earth, in the pleasures of the mind. On the contrary, here, the more pleasure you have, the more it increases. If your abilities get better, and your searching, and your and the adventure of thought is, becomes more enjoyable. It's like it's a different realm. But that's what Chazal say, that that Chachamim should not be seen from the Shosei and Katan Go. The Talmidei Chachamim shouldn't always be having sex with their wives, only once a week. Because, but it only says by Talmidei Chachamim, because since they can sublimate their energy, so for them it's better. But for the Amei Haaretz, no. For the Amei Haaretz, it's not true. And he needs it.
But won't you run into that problem? It, like that, you know, your neighbor that talking to you, if they're always having sex with their wives, aren't they gonna?
Well, he has neither.
You're saying within the framework of neither, then
neither will protect him.
Even if during that time period they're having sex many
right,
times.
Right. That's correct. But of course, it's everything's individual. If you overindulge, there's such thing as overindulgence.
Yeah.
Even with neither. But the Chachamim said about coming to Chachamim, especially because they could use their energy in the higher realm, so they should restrain themselves more. But that's only coming to Chachamim. So the Torah really is for everybody. It's every level. It's adjusted for every level. So you have a Talmud Chachamim and you have a regular person. You don't give the same prescription to both.
Now, this would apply even to not necessarily searching for more ideas, but to, let's say, look at the same idea over and over, because it would kind of be endless, right? You can keep going deeper into the idea.
You should.
Because the thing is, I would think that because let's say my question was that maybe you'll get, you know, bored or overindulging in ideas. So the only instance I can think of that happening is when you look at ideas at the same time, you know, the same idea over and over again, and just get bored of it, because you just look at it too many times.
That's correct.
But is that necessarily true? Because
yeah, it is necessarily true, because that's why they tell a story about a girl that somebody asked him Akasha. He was working on Akasha for weeks. So he says, this is kind of like a joke. So the Gadol says, the answer to your kasha is in this Tesis. So he takes a look at the Tesis and he says, Tesis is an answer to the kasha. There's an answer to the kasha there. So he says, that's the answer. He went on to the next Tesis. So it's true, you can overdo it. The person has to know, you know what I mean? As long as the mind is entertained and is searching, you can keep on working on the problem. But then if it's not, and you're just forcing yourself, so then you're just wasting your time. And you're doing much better to take another problem, which is exciting and interesting, rather than wasting your time going over the problem. And when I was a kid, so I wanted to make a landing. So I was a young boy, and I decided that I'm going to take the fifth parak in Brachas, and I'm not going to ask anybody when I get stuck. I'll just use the jazz show. You know? I was very stubborn about it. So my father used to say to me when he saw me, he said, look, you know, if there's a certain point, it was just wasting your time. It could be you'll get it, but it'll take you 2 hours to get out of the jazz show. You'd be better off asking, you know, spending a certain amount of time. And then ask me, I'll tell you this one, go on to the next one. But of course, when you're young, you're very extreme, yeah? So I had a hard time with them.
We're still young.
Sure. But that's true. And that's why you have to keep on learning new ideas. Because the same ideas over and over again will be boring. Or if you take something that's not ideas, just facts, can get boring also. That's why you have boring courses. Memorization. But it's never a boring course if it's problem solving. Because that excites the mind, gets the mind going. Yes.
How do we know what of the Kamakosam can sublimate his energies? How do we know that the instinctual energies and the intellectual energies that they stem from the same source? That you know, like if this is being used up in terms of the intellectual, then it's going to have less. I mean, how do we know that there's that they come from the same source?
The Rambam addresses that point. He says you notice that when a person is in thought, his sexual libido is lower. So that would seem to indicate that there's one source. And when a person is involved in thought, his sexual libido, well, I mean, when he gets out of thought, it can come back again. But when he's in thought, his libido is lowered.
And from the soul, and when you're in
vice
thought.
Versa. When a person is involved in libido, his concentrative powers are diminished.
As possible for the energy to increase, right? Like to keep on getting more, and then you have to find new outlets for the energy.
Again.
Like, and then so once you like, I mean, because like isn't there a gemara that says like, I mean, like the more of a tamakasam you are, the more of a gadol you are, the more a yitzhar you're gonna have. So like, does that mean like the more energy like you unlock or you increase? Like, I mean, so now you're gonna have more of a you're gonna have the biggest you need to find. More of an outlet for the energy, like.
The Gemara says that I think it was Abaye was going on the road, and was following this young couple. And the young couple had been intimate, and they weren't. So he says, if I was alone, I wouldn't be able to control myself. So he came to the Beis Medrash, he was crying. So they said to him, "Don't feel bad, because kol hagol mechaver yitzhar lo lemenu," that the same instinctual drive. That a person that's a big chacham has a lot of psychological energy. So that psychological energy, when it's not involved in learning, will go into sexual area, libido, and taivas and other areas. So don't feel bad. The Chazal had that idea that a person that is on a lower level in terms of psychological energy. Will be on a lower level in terms of learning too. The learning is the ability to sublimate the psychological energy. So many times you find out the one is always the way, the one means that many times that works that way.
Is a person able to increase his psychological energy?
I don't think so.
It's just a predetermined thing all life.
Yeah, I guess you could free up certain energies that are bound.
What do you mean by that?
Like energies that are tied to certain things, you can loosen them from their entrenchment.
So you can use them in other areas.
So then it'll be more free, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the Gemara says, two stories of Meir and Rabbi Akiva, where the Sutton made himself appear like a beautiful woman and they ran after him. So you see that even the greatest Talmud Chacham, when they're not involved in learning, titles can take over and attract them. You can't kill the Yetzer. You can only use the energy so at the time he's at bay. That's why there's a famous woman going, I don't know if this is brought down, but he says if you want to make a decision about something in life, so you should sit and learn Torah. And then after the Torah, make the decision. Because he felt, it's true, he said, I mean, I know they said it in his name. He said, the theory is that after you're involved in learning and thought, your energies are temperate. So then you're in the best position to make a decision. Whereas without the learning, the energies are in the emotional areas. So you're going to have a hard time making an objective decision.
Would you say that learning is for everyone, or does a person need to be on a certain intellectual level to really benefit from, you know?
Yeah, a person needs to be on a certain intellectual level.
So for some people, it basically wouldn't even be beneficial for them to...
Right, Ms. Gemara in Gemara Chulma says if you learn for 5 years and you don't see any payrolls, you don't see any productivity, that is not fair. So the theoretical is not for everybody. The Torah didn't expect everybody to be a great theoretician.
Is that just for the more abstract
levels of learning? There's plenty of Torah to learn. I mean, there's Mishnayos, there's Chumash, there's Nevi'im, there's Mishle, there's Kehelas, there's Tulum, there's plenty of Svarim that a person can learn. There's Medrash, the Bale Agada. I mean, the Rashi always quotes the Magidim or Mamshech HaSalev. So there was they reached the Hamon through the emotions. So Torah also has that as well. I mean, each person, it's nice, like everybody says that the Rav said that he, or Chaim never sang his mirrors. But that's good for him because he's always in thought. But it doesn't mean that if you don't sing his mirrors, you like a Chaim. But his mirrors really is important. As a matter of fact, in the Miles of Victory, I have his mirrors on the Shabbos. If you read his words and study them, there are nice ideas there too. So it's a Shevach Lakeo and a thing. But for a person like a Pion, it's a waste of time.
So there are certain things which are accessible to everyone, just not the higher level.
That's right. Certain things are accessible to everybody. Everybody can learn Torah. Everybody can gain knowledge, and everybody can enjoy it too. But the higher spheres, like the one said by Rabbi Akiva, was the dashening. So they told him, "said klachei to halacha." You shouldn't waste your time with drushes. Halacha is your area.
What is that word, klach?
Klachei to halacha.
What's klach?
Go.
Oh.
From where?
Right.
Isn't that because he wasn't good at it?
No, I don't think so. Maybe you're right, I don't know. But he was good at Allah. Now Allah was a superior training.
What, more abstract?
More abstract, yeah. Jewish is, you have more leeway, you could fill in, it's nice, nobody attacks you, nobody questions you, not on the spot. It's nicer.
So are those different types of intellectual perfection? Like there is, and then so there is, like there is a perfection, like the theoretician, and then there's a lower level. Like, I mean, these aren't on the same sphere of perfection, right?
Not the same sphere, but it all aims at perfection.
Right.
Rashi says, "Mamshech HaSalev." Move the emotions toward the right objectives.
What's Rashi?
Yeah.
So he's saying that basically that there's always going to be Yom Ha'aretz?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yisachar and Zvon. Smach Zvon, that's Yisachar, Yisachar Ba'olah. So you see that the Torah recognizes that some people are businessmen, and have that ability, and that's an ability too. Not everybody has it.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that's different from with a coal system that we have today? Because you have often heard people compare, the current system to that sort of arrangement.
Which one?
Like Yisachar and Zvon. Like they say that over there, the Torah endorsed that sort of thing, that they were doing business and supporting Yisachar's learning, so that's what they say about the kol, that same sort of thing.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay, but there's a big rambam on that. In other words, that the person can't demand it. If somebody comes over to them and offers them, they have right to take it. But to say that I'm going to raise money for them, sit and learn, and I'll have people give me money. That's not right. That's Rambam says not right.
This is in others, that Rambam?
Yeah, Rambam and others, yeah. But others disagree with him. A lot of others disagree with him. They can't condemn a cult.
So,
but
if someone came...
But Yisachar and Zvon, even the Rambam helps them.
if someone came up to, let's say, you know, one of the guys at Yeshiva, and they said, "Oh, I will give you money just for being at Yeshiva," would that be wrong for us to accept the money? No.
Absolutely not.
According to the Rama, it wouldn't be.
So, what is the idea of Yisachar and Zvulun? That just people are not so fit for learning, and there are other people that are, and that's kind of a recognition of where they're at in terms of their abilities.
In terms of their ability. Well, the Rama met Yisachar and Zvulun with his brother. His brother was a merchant, but his brother wasn't devoid of learning. He was very good. The Rama says he was very good in Diktuk and Tanakh. In Tshuva and Tanakh, so he was an expert. He used to get his notes on Diktukim and Tanakh. So he wasn't just devoid of learning. I mean, there's nobody that's that. But Baba Basra comes and listens to Pirkei Avos, and he has a good Rav Darshan. That's also learning. Even though it might not be on a deep level, but he's moving his mind, he's moving him towards the right direction. So learning is for on all levels, but there are different abilities. I mean, you can't deny it. In the Kolo, the Kovna Kolo in Slobodka was one of the first Kolos. So there they only chose five people who were tremendously the Chacham. Ken Gedolei Ador. Their idea was that the people that have these unique abilities, they should be supported. They don't have an idea of a call like today.
That and everyone goes to it.
Everyone goes to the call.
Right.
I mean, I'm not saying that a lot of people in the call aren't fit, but some of them aren't. And for some of them, just to sit by a Gemara and not really understand what they're learning is me is not really the idea of a kol.
The thing is, though, let's say a person has a recognition, okay, this person learns better than me, so I think I'm going to support him and detract from my learning. Isn't that a little foolish? I mean, he's not going to get as much as the other person would, but he's still going to get something out of it.
Check Yechon Kodman. Yechon Kodman, he comes first.
Himself. So then why would we say it's a good thing to recognize that
he can't
help?
I mean, he's up on Zvulun.
Mm-hmm.
Because Zvulun couldn't learn all day.
Are you saying it's just a question of how much energy I can devote to for an area?
The Gemara says the mitzvah of Gisa Boyom Valeva by saying Krishna Shachar Sarvas. But Dovazer also learned a little bit from Amaritz. I would tell it to an Amaritz, because anyway, they don't want to. That'll be it.
So, like something like yeshivas raising money, is that they're not demanding it? They're just.
Well, that's the machlokes of the Rambam and the other poskim. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you're allowed to raise money in order to establish people that sit and learn. So the Shulchan Aruch says you can. Shulchan Aruch pops on the ground pretty much, except he says that a rav in a town where he needs people under him so that then they can do it. That's what I'm Shulchan Aruch. But today, they went the other way. That they felt, or I think Rav Moshe was very much behind, because he felt that in this door, you're not going to be able to have any London unless you have a call. Because otherwise people are not going to learn. So he endorsed it. He felt at different times. It's an interesting thing. With all the coal we have today, we don't produce the gedolim that we produced when we didn't have any coal. When there were hardly that many yeshivas. You know, Chaim Volozhiner was the first one to start the real yeshiva movement. It's a funny kind of thing.
Was that because the quality of learning went down?
No?
It seems so. I don't know why. I mean, I think that's part of Moshe's argument, that you don't have any real Talmid Chachamim, so you have to have everybody that you can to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
Not that quantity can make up for quality, but it does do something.
Maybe with halacha as opposed to drasha, I'm thinking, wouldn't drasha be something that would need, I guess, more intellectual precision? Because opposed to halacha, where the rules are much clearer, with drasha, it's dealing with, let's say, morals or, let's say, scientific type areas, where, like, you have to, one would need to have much finer tuned ideas for them to be correct.
Well, it depends what you mean by drasha. I mean, drasha could mean there's a Chazal that says, so the Gemara says he should learn Divrei Agada. But that's Divrei Agada that deal with, you know, Maisa Bereishis and Maisa Makor. So that's even more abstract than learning. But the Divrei Agada that I'm talking about is the Divrei Agada explaining. Or moving people with on Shana Shabbos afternoon with learning Pirkei Avos, something like that. So of course when a Rebbe something teaches Pirkei Avos, it's not on as high a level as learning a Black Amara. Mm-hmm. Black Amara is complicated, you gotta hold your head, you can't lose, you gotta define it. It's a much more scientific study.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose I was thinking like the Gemara you brought down during Meir, that with that Nida, so the West will be like a Kala. Like it's, that seems like, even though it seems very simple at first glance, it seems that it's, in order to really understand, like you took the Gemara not just to face value, and
right.
So it would need a kind of psychological understanding of time and mitzvot, etc.
Right, that's different.
Mm-hmm.
That's different. I'm talking about Divrei Agada and Mamshech HaSolev.
But you wouldn't say that Rabbi Meir is Mamshech HaSolev?
No, that's not Mamshech HaSolev. That's an analysis of life.
Uh-huh.
That's an analysis of life. Mamshech HaSolev is something which moves your emotion.
In that type of area, you can have, it might even just be impossible, because you might have emotional blocks, not to see certain psychological things in your
that's
health.
True. That's very sure. Okay, guys.